This is my second podcast dealing with the life of Charles Haswell Campagnac. In the first podcast on his life, I dealt with his arrival back in Burma in 1909 at the age of 23 when he commenced his practice as a barrister. At the end of that podcast, I made mention of a famous case in which he became involved, and this podcast will deal with that case. It's chapter 7 in the book on his life. I'm not going to read the whole chapter, I'm going to read extracts of it, but you'll very much get the theme of how British justice was administered at that time in Burma. The case is known as the Arnold case because that's the name of the chap who was prosecuted for defamation. And I'll now read extracts from the chapter. This case arose out of a prosecution for abduction and rape of a little Malay Mohammedan girl named Aina, who was said to have been raped by an Australian planter, McCormick, who lived at Victoria Point, the southernmost part of Burma. He was a rubber planter. He was very friendly with the European Superintendent of Police, Captain Finney, and the European Deputy Commissioner of Megaway, Mr. Andrew. The subdivisional officer at Victoria Point was an Anglo-Burman, like Mr. Campagnac. His name was Mr. A.W. Buchanan. He was informed that McCormack was keeping Aina, who was the daughter of one of his employees, in his house forcibly, and that her parents could not get access to her. Mr. Buchanan issued a warrant for McCormack's arrest and directed the police to remove the girl from his house. When the girl was medically examined, it was found that an attempt had been made to ravish her. As McCormack was a European British subject, as defined by the Criminal Procedure Code, he had to be tried by a European, and so the case was sent for trial to the court of Mr. G.P. Agnew at Magui. McCormack's defence was that he had been informed that Aina had been prostituted to coolies at a rupee a time and that he had heard that she was suffering from a venereal disease. He had therefore taken her to his house and treated her medically. The civil surgeon reported that as a result of his examination of the girl, it was impossible that Aina had had intercourse with a number of men. Mr. Andrew discharged McCormack and in doing so described his action in taking Aina to his house and treating her medically as pure and philanthropic. The case happened in a remote part of Burma, and in the ordinary course of events, nothing would have been heard about it outside the small town of Magui. However, Mrs. Buchanan, the wife of the subdivisional magistrate, reported the case to Mr. Channing Arnold, the son of Sir Edwin Arnold, who was at that time the editor of one of the two leading newspapers in Rangoon, the Rangoon Times. Mr. Arnold submitted the facts to the Lieutenant Governor, Sir Harvey Adamson. He received a communication from the Chief Secretary of the Government as follows. The Lieutenant Governor has caused an inquiry to be made into the allegations made against certain officials in the Tenasserim Division and has satisfied himself there is no truth in the allegations made against them. Now, just a little extra information here. Arnold, yes, had the newspaper, and he actually sought advice from Mr. Buchanan about the article that he was to publish. And Buchanan confirmed all of the information was correct. However, Mr. Arnold never used the confirmation because he knew that if he identified Mr. Buchanan, Mr. Buchanan would likely have been sacked from the British government. So what he published was the following words. By the criminal law against which he has offended, the planter McCormack will be punished. But what about those who have condoned his misdeeds? They have offended not only against the criminal law, but against the empire itself. So the case took place, and Campagnac was involved in defending Mr. Arnold. And there's some other comments, again, confirming about the way British justice was administered, which some of which we mentioned in the last podcast. But here he mentions the following. The case caused considerable public interest, and the court was crowded with spectators. It was said that the Sergeant Usher made a small fortune during the case by only admitting members of the public who gave him a tip, and that if he had not been sufficiently tipped by anyone, he'd drag that person out of the court after a little while and push another person in who had given him what he considered to be a sufficient charge for being admitted to the case. The long and the short of it is that the results were that Arnold was found guilty, and he was sentenced to over a year's jail. And it was considered that because Arnold was over 50 years of age at that time, it was quite a severe sentence for a European. Now, of course, there are a lot of people very upset about this case, and they decided to take it all the way to the Privy Council in England. And I'll make a comment here that actually they also lost at the Privy Council. Arnold lost. But the only way that that decision of the Privy Council could be overturned was by taking it to the House of Commons. But the war, First World War, intervened, and that didn't happen, and Arnold was eventually released from jail. But just they had some very famous characters involved in the Privy Council appeal. One appearing for Mr. Arnold was Sir Robert Finlay, who later became the Lord Chancellor of Britain. Now, in his concluding remarks at the hearing of the appeal, Sir Robert Finlay used these memorable words: "If my lords throughout the empire, every subject, no matter how poor or in what part of His Majesty's dominions, is deprived of that which is his birthright, namely a fair trial, then the integrity of the empire cannot be maintained." Pretty powerful words. So the person, the junior, as it were, who was supporting Sir Robert Finlay was a man called David Alec Wilson. He, in turn, became a very senior figure in the legal world. But he made this comment at the end. He rose and he said that neither his learned senior, Sir Robert Finlay, or he, nor any of Mr. Arnold's advocates had ever admitted the facts in the case were untrue, which is what the Privy Council tried to claim. The presiding judge had said that if Mr. Wilson wished to raise that point at a stage, he was liberty to do so, at which Mr. Wilson remarked, "All I can say, my lords, is that it makes printer's pie of your judgment." I actually had to look up what printer's pie meant, and it's quite a clever comment because it ties back to the way that papers, the words in papers were set in those days by hand, and that sometimes they jumbled up the letters, and that was called making it a printer's pie. So at the end of this chapter, Charles Kampagnac makes the following observation: that Mr. Arnold had committed the unpardonable sin of attacking a member of the civil service. Anyone who did that was regarded as a social outcast. It was the policy of officials in the East to uphold the members of the civil service at all costs. Any attack on the civil service would lower British prestige in the East. It is for this reason that the Indian civil servants were dubbed as the Heaven-borns. They were in the same category as Caesar's wife, above suspicion. I was a marked man for having associated myself so closely with Mr. Arnold. On the other hand, I'd become a popular figure. Whenever I attended a cinema, people would get up and cheer me, and I am sure that the publicity which I obtained in this case helped my practice at the bar. Well, I'll finish this. It's quite a short section, but as I said, I didn't want it to go into too much detail, but I'm sure we're getting the drift of what it was like for Europeans and non-Europeans before the justice system in Burma at that time. Thank you very much for listening.